Welcome to Paint Ed. PCA provides painting contractors with connections they need to grow their business. To find out more and to become a member, visit pcapainted.org. Find more great content like this on PCA Overdrive. A subscription to the platform is included with membership. For all of you non-members out there, sign up for a free trial. PCA Overdrive is available on the App Store and Google Play. This episode is brought to you by Bear and Federated Insurance.
Welcome to the Women in Paint podcast. I'm Michael Chaney, the owner of No Drip Painting, where we are changing lives through paint. And I got my boys with me today, 605 Painting out of South Dakota. That's right. And I saw you guys getting down to some Beyonce over there. I love it.
Dang, you saw
I
that?
I actually forgot you could see us. I'm like, cool, I'm going to see us. I was about to stand up and start throwing it back.
But yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. I missed that. especially with your knee. You just had surgery.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. I've got Daniel and Kyle on with me from 605 Painting, and I got the pleasure of meeting them a few weeks back at Nick Slavik's winter retreat. It was, such a remarkable few days. And these guys really stuck out to me because they're super passionate about what they do. They're fired up. Just talking to them got me inspired. So we're just going to keep that conversation going, guys. So let's just start and talk about how that retreat has impacted you and kind of the value behind getting together with other contractors in the way that we did. So when you left that retreat, what was your mindset? What was the plan? Talk to me about it.
Yeah. So I'd say so we've been in business for about 4.5 years and we never asked really for any advice. We were just kind of rolling with the punches, rolling with the waves. And then when you get into a retreat like that, we had no idea what we were walking into. We walked in there, got all of our questions answered and more. Like, I still have a notes page that's 4 miles long that I haven't even gotten to touching yet because we're just knocking one thing out at a time. So we went to that retreat and it was like college for painting, for us.
Yeah.
We got 4 years of knowledge, or what would have taken us 4 years to figure out, mm-hmm. in the span of a week. So I mean, golly, that trip was so great. Yeah, now we're going off to the expo, taking off Monday. So just super excited to be in the painting industry. And I mean, we're doing our best here, the best we can, to professionalize it the best way possible.
Yeah, I kind of phrased it to Nick Slavik on Facebook that, shout out Nick Slavik, shout out. I said it to him, I felt like our business was kind of covered in mud a little bit, and we just didn't know how to get that mud off by ourselves. Cause like Kyle said, we had been doing all of this by ourselves. We don't, obviously our competition isn't going to help us out in the painting world here in our city. So we're like, man, what to do? And then we went to this retreat and we met amazing people that literally rinsed off all the mud off of our company. And then we're like shining their windows for us. It was amazing. So I felt like we could see out of our window, a lot more clearer. And maybe the back window's still a little muddy, but at least we kind of know the steps to start washing and rinsing that mud off.
Okay, so I love that analogy, Daniel. You got the mud cleared off your windows, and now you can see things a little bit clearly. The other thing I want to mention, Kyle, you talked about you guys were kind of in your own world for 4 years. And I can relate to that because there was a period of time where I didn't really have other painting contractors or even business owners that I could talk to, or at least I felt like I didn't, right? I wasn't really putting myself in the situations. I wasn't going to the retreats. So I wasn't getting those connections. Can you guys just kind of expand a little bit on how important that has been? It sounds like you got a lot out of it because now you're going to the expo, you're taking some time off work. Obviously it's, you've got to make some travel arrangements. You're going to the expo. So you're finding a lot of value in those connections. So can you guys kind of maybe just talk a little bit more in detail about how important that has become to you?
Just in terms of the retreat?
Yeah. Or just now.
Or the connections.
Yeah. And what I mean here is, and I'll kind of relate it back to me, is there was a time in my business where I just kind of kept my head down and I was pushing forward, but I wasn't really making the effort to participate even in the PCA things. You know, it wasn't really on my radar to find other contractors, especially locally, and to talk with them and engage with them, right? Now, some of my best buds are my Columbus painters or contractors who, in some sense, are my competitors, right? And I don't really look at them as competitors. I mean, even though we kind of are going for the same customers, but really we can talk, we can leverage, you know, each other's experience, we can share ideas, and there's this open communication. And one, it feels like, man, okay, I'm not alone in this, right? There are other people maybe that have gone through the same thing, trying to do the same thing. And even just having those conversations has been so powerful to me. And on some level, I get the sense that you guys have recognized how important that is to connect with others in the industry.
Yeah, I feel like Kyle and I are very independent. Like, we're very independent, and that's a con to us. Like, we were almost too much independent. It was very hard to probably reach out. And like, number one, I didn't think other painting business owners would, even around the nation, would like want to help so much. I think it's just really cool about the painting industry. And maybe it's, I've heard from people in this group, like, no, like the painting industry is actually pretty unique. I don't know if the welding industry or a different industry is as awesome as the painting industry. So like the individuals that we met at the Nick Slavik Winter Retreat, that was amazing to really dive into. Yeah. But one of the biggest takeaways is ask and you shall receive, or the worst they can say is no. So like Bradley Ellison, reached out to him via email. He hopped on a Zoom call with us, you know, emailing back and forth with Jason Harris and Nick Slavik post-retreat. You know, sending us a vital information. I mean, it's just crazy. You just have to lean into it and not be so independent.
Yeah, we're not the most tech savvy people. And after a meeting with like Chris Mull and things like that, and he started breaking down how he job costs. And then we sat down with you and you showed us how you job costed. And then you guys were just so kind enough to share your templates. And, you know, we're not tech savvy. So like the first 4 years we're in business, we're trying to create these templates to try to get ourselves organized. And we had no idea what we were doing. So when we saw how you were doing it and like Chris Mull, it was just like, boom, game changing. So yeah, no, it's how did Nick Slavik word it? He said that he likes to do these events because it's an excuse to be with his friends. And it's like, I saw that, like walking into it, I didn't know what to expect. This is like my first ever, like, you know, painting expo retreat kind of ordeal. So going into it is like, this is like a tight knit, like community, like everyone's like displaying their businesses on a whiteboard for the world to see. And then we just start stabbing at it. We start nitpicking. Like, why are you doing that? You need to do this. And it's like Prit said, he stood up and he said, I love this group. And that just fired me up right there too. I was like, no,
give me some more.
get the caffeine out. Like, I want to start.
Yeah, you know what, my big takeaway here, what what you said, Daniel, that's going to stick with me is ask and you shall receive, right? That's a good, I think, motto to live by. All right, let's talk about your road to a million. So in the painting industry, there's this idea that when the first goal, the first place you want to get to is a million. People put a lot of efforts to get there. And there's kind of this hype around that's kind of where you need to get, right? To kind of develop some credibility. Let's talk about your road to a million. You guys are young. I think, you know, you've hit this first level in the business. What were some of the, you know, difficulties in getting to that million? What did that look like for your business? How did it happen? How'd you do it?
So we're 4.5 years in. We hit a million at the 4 year mark. So the first two and a half years we were painting nonstop. So first 2 years we're like on a crew together. We were selling our own jobs, completing our own jobs. We weren't really scaling. It was just like we were taking it one job at a time, booking ourselves out in advance, you know, just kind of getting things rolling.
We were also doing everything on paper.
Yeah. We were doing estimates on paper. So like we're running a business like cavemen at this point. And we just didn't know what we were doing. We're just playing around with it. So slowly started growing, started learning more, shifting our mindset. So about year three, we were still painting, but we were branched out into a couple couple different crews. And then one day our estimate request or our leads that were coming in, we had like 127 like leads that were just stacked up in our queue of people that wanted a paint job from us because we built like that credibility. It's like, we do great work and like, we're super passionate about it. And people got caught onto that really quick with us in the Sioux Falls area. So all these started stacking up. Daniel put down the painting brush and he was like, this is the best thing ever. It's like, we have to start working on the business and not working in the business.
Yeah.
And then I was a little more hesitant to get off the brush. I probably stayed on the brush about a month longer than he did. It was just one of those mindsets. It's like, no one's going to paint for my customer better than I can. So
yeah.
It was really hard for me to trust and delegate that to someone else. But eventually I put down the brush and immediately our revenue from year two to year three doubled. And then from year three to year four, basically almost doubled again. So putting down the brush, start working on your business and not in your business. That's kind of the whole persona is like what got us to past that million mark.
Yeah. Let me ask you guys something real quick, because I hear other people say this and I want to see if you guys can help me understand why this is so difficult. It was difficult for me too, though. But when we're the painters and we believe that no one else can do the best as good as we do, right? We can control quality. We can make our customer happy. There's a lot of hesitation. You even saw it from some of the folks at the retreat of letting that brush go. Put the brush down. You can do this. Why do you think we have such a hard time of giving up that control?
I think it's just that mindset, or like I had alluded to, it's like, no one's going to paint this customer's house better than I can. No one's going to be able to control the quality better than I can. So, I mean, as a business owner, when you care so much about what you're doing, like Aaron, yeah, Aaron, we're staying with him at an Airbnb in Orlando here in the next couple of days. But after he was done presenting to us, we still went to him right afterwards. You putting down the brush? It's like, I know it's hard to take advice from guys that are younger than you, but you better put down that damn brush. So it's just, I think it's got to be a quality control thing, because even Chris Moll, now I have him on all sorts of social media platforms. I have him on Snapchat and he's working every day. Like, yeah. I just saw him yesterday. He's sanding down a log cabin and it's like, man, your time is better elsewhere. Like, don't work in your business, work on your business. That's kind of just the whole persona behind it.
Yeah. It depends on what kind of lifestyle that you want to live. That was a big thing I took away from the Next Level Retreat too. It's like, you kind of, at a certain point, once you hit like $1 million company, then it's like, okay, you could, there's a lot of fixings you could do, a lot of time you could invest. How much do you want to invest? That was a big thing for Nick Slavik, time with his family, right? Everybody, as a common theme throughout this, I want more time with my family, but yeah, I want more money, which usually requires a little bit more time. And for us, that's where I kind of stressed to him. Even yesterday when we're chit-chatting, he's like, well, you could just do that. It's easy. And I'm like, yes, but is that going to match up with the lifestyle that I want? You know, I want to be able to leave on a Friday with no stress. And right now I know that my Fridays would be extremely stressful in a way. Like, I mean, him and I could grind through and not have a sales guy, not have a project manager, and we could be just fine. But do we want to be able to not answer those phone calls after hours and kind of delegate that to somebody else? And then eventually start to set those boundaries for our team as well, as they get, you know, bigger and bigger personalized. But so to circle back, I suppose, like how we got to a million, one of the phrases I like to stick with is scaling with structure. At a certain point, we had to like pump the brakes, and it was okay if we lost a couple customers and like fix whatever we knew we needed some help with. And that's where it was like, oh boy, we need a CRM ASAP, because we were doing things on paper. We tried our own Excel spreadsheet. Kyle's not that smart. So I'm like, we need to reach out to somebody else and get something. So CRM happened to be DripJobs for us. It's working really well. I don't know if it'll be able to work with us when we get to the 2-3 million. Hopefully, you know, we do that someday. Michael, I don't know. You're killing it. It's insane. You're a role model for us. A big thing I wanted to touch on was, a million sounds really cool, right? But at what cost? You make $1 million in your company, but at what cost? If it costed you $900,000 to produce $1 million, and you really break it down, okay, there's $100,000 left. We've got to get paid. The painter's got to get paid. The paint's got to get paid for. Maybe that's a poor example. I'm just saying, whatever the dollar amount is that you're chasing, it really boils down to at what cost. And that's where we are like, we need job costing. As much as we can listen to Nick Slavik online, people are like, why don't you just watch that? I'm like, we do. It's just not clicking. We had to go to this retreat and sit down with some people and have them break it down for us. And that's what we're doing. We're job costing. We've got all of our, we went back in January through February. Yesterday, we plugged everybody's information in so we can kind of see what we're making, you know, if we lost money on a job. And one of our project managers that we had yesterday, he was actually getting really upset because the profit percentage wasn't high enough. And he's not even getting commission off of it. He goes, this just bugged me for you guys. Like, this is just unbelievable. He goes, what went wrong here? I'm like, cool. At least we can ask those kinds of questions and learn.
That's right.
But if you're not asking a question at what cost and actually job costing, you really don't know. Yeah, we found some success, but eventually I know we would have plateaued if we hadn't scaled the structure.
Yeah, man, you nailed a few key points there. I just want to kind of pull some of that out and highlight it. One thing that you said that really stuck with me is the lifestyle that you want. And in the beginning, when you're grinding and, you know, you're the painter, you're wearing all the hats, like many of us have done, sometimes you don't think or you lose sight of the fact that your business is actually supposed to work for you. Your business can help you create the lifestyle that you want. And what I want to bring some awareness to is that sometimes I find that people don't really know what they want for their life. They don't fully know what kind of lifestyle they want, right? People always say, oh, I want to spend time with family. But what does that actually mean, right? And so I think the invitation is to understand what you want as a person, what kind of life you have, and then bring in the realization that your business can actually create that for you. So love that you brought that up. And then you also talked about your journey to a million. At what cost? What is the cost of that, right? And I want to bring kind of in this frame of mind of that, you know, my journey to a million, in some capacities, the cost was my health. Now, I'm a little bit older than you guys. You guys are still in your 20s. So someday you'll have to worry about things like this. But, you know, my road to a million, it resulted in years of chronic back pain that went up into my neck. I was literally just physically feeling the effects of my business. When I realized that, I learned the importance of taking care of myself. And I think it's important to mention that because, you know, as entrepreneurs, we've got all this responsibility on our shoulders. When you start building a team, not only are you trying to pay yourself, you're trying to pay a team, which is an amazing thing that we get to do, right? In this world, we get to literally help people create the life they want and create options for themselves. That's amazing, but it's also a lot to shoulder, right? So you brought up some great things there, Kyle. Or Daniel, let's keep moving. So you guys have gotten to this $1 million mark. You've now got some processes in place, which I love to hear. You've got your job costing going. You've got some layers within the business. You each know what your job is. And I think we should maybe highlight that for a minute, because when you get to a certain point in the business and where you guys are business partners, you now have divided your responsibilities. Talk about how you chose to, Daniel, take over production, Kyle, take over sales. Talk about how you guys kind of strategically made that decision, because I think that this is, once you get to the $1 million mark, I think that this is where you have to start changing your mindset a bit and understand that there's kind of two pieces of the business at this point. There is production, there is the sales side. How did you guys land on these dividing up these responsibilities?
So,
do you know where it all started?
EOS?
No. Well, yes, partially. Bradley Ellison is kind of where it really started. So, I kind of knew we were in this weird rut, and I was like, I don't know what else to do. I don't really know what I don't know. So, I ended up reaching out. I was watching, and I don't know why it was Bradley Ellison, but I just chose him. I hopped on a Zoom call. He wasn't able to make it that day. And I kind of opened up her business, said, hey, we're in this stuck. I don't know why we're stuck, but can you help us out? He looked into her business. He goes, hold up. You and Kyle are, you have the same email. You're both selling. You're both managing projects. He goes, that's terrible. Don't do that. And it was awesome. It was like, cool. You know, it was like this overwhelming feeling of relief that he was like, that's what's wrong with your company. And it was that we needed to peel ourselves away and separate sales and production. And we were just both doing it. You know, we were both, you know, digging through the same email and things like that. And we decided, since Kyle was a little bit uglier, that he would do sales. And so he's basically, Bradley Ellison was like, hey, look, you don't know if he's really good at sales unless you start keeping track of it. What's his closing rate? We couldn't answer it at the time. And so for me, you know, it was like, hey, look, I was probably already doing the majority of the production management anyways, and he was doing the majority of the sales anyhow. So it was like, let's just kind of separate it and see how it works. And then it was like super smooth. There was no mishaps. He wasn't opening an email, forgetting to reply to somebody, because that's what was happening occasionally after we got so big. So he took over all sales. Right after that, I took over all production. And it was like, bingo. I started making my own systems so that we could scale. And then he started doing the same thing in sales. He could focus on sales and say, hey, are we going to do square foot pricing? Are we going to do unit-based pricing? And like, he could answer those questions and really have a focus. He had his own bowling lane, basically. And I had my own. And that allowed us to really, you know, hit a couple strikes in a row really, really quick. And then just going to the Nick Slavic retreat was like, okay, cool. There's sales and there's production, but there's also like, somebody has to be in charge above that. And somebody has to wear this hat and this hat. And we have this board behind us that you guys can't see, but we had a Traction or EOS implementer come in and kind of do a breakdown for us. And we kind of understood it. And then once we went to the Nick Slavic retreat, we're like, okay, I get it. Head of finance, accountant, check. And then, you know, they're like, who's good with numbers? We're like, neither of us too. We're not good with numbers. So head of finance, you know, we're like, okay, our accountant basically does all those roles anyways. Check, you know, that there, she wears that hat. You know, we don't have an in-house accountant, but she's one phone call away or one text away. And we started talking like, who's going to be the president and all this jazz. And it sounds very ego to say, I want to be the president. Right. But then it's like, I have to look and see if the president is either an integrator or a visionary. Mm-hmm. I think he's an integrator. And Kyle and I are like, we started talking like, bro, I think we're both visionaries. We both have all these awesome ideas. And it's like, we really suck at implementing them. I look over, I'm like, Kyle, you still trying to create, sorry, we're creating a gathering of South Dakota painters currently right now. I know you guys.
Okay, nice.
Painters, and we're like, we found so much. And that was another thing that we're touching on. But I look over and just like creating this logo. And I'm like, bruh, you're sitting there for 2 hours. We need to have somebody else do this for you. So like, we have these great ideas. We'd love to implement them.
Yeah.
We're not the greatest implementers, but we have that savvy, like, hey, we need to do that. We know we do. We just need someone to execute it.
So I feel like even just since I met you guys, you have developed so much more awareness. Like even the fact that you're saying, okay, we're both visionaries. At some point we need an integrator. Or the other thing you're saying, what you're touching on is you're saying who, not how, right? So who, like your accountant is your who, and you're approaching this from who can I get to help me instead of how do the two of you do it? Now, we know as business owners, there are things that you're probably going to have to do. Maybe it's not your forte. Maybe it's not your strong suit. You've got to do that as you're on this learning journey. But man, I just love how you guys, you're implementing your systems. You now have your dedicated roles. I love it. I know that you guys are going to just like totally kill it out there in South Dakota. Let's talk about some of your goals for this year and some of the things you immediately changed once you got back from that retreat.
You want to talk about sales?
Kind of where our sales goal is at. So last year we broke the million mark. We're at like 1.274 on the year. I want us to crack that in summertime alone. And you know, where we're at, we have an exterior season and like interior season that's broken up because we have harsh winters, but Yeah. So for the exterior season alone, I'd like us to get to that 1.2 mark. Cause you know, in the past couple of years, we've been basically like almost doubling our revenue on the year that we've done. So, yeah, goals to kind of get there is we hired another salesperson. He's in training right now. He's doing a great job. Salesman Nate. We're going to sales together, kind of teaching him the ropes on, things to discuss and so on and so forth. And then we just set standards like for the week. So, he has to do like over 25 sales on the week. He has to close half or more. And then it's just a constant game of like training. It's like, hey, if your sales rate's too high, you're too cheap. If it's too low, you're too expensive and you're not probably doing things very well. So there's like a fine balance. It's like, it's okay to lose a sale or two. We don't have to win them all. So, it's a whole process of like also teaching him how to price things accordingly, things to look out for. It's a process. It's a game, but you know, we're having fun with it. So,
sorry, there's a little bit of a delay here, so I keep interrupting you, but how did you find that hire? So I love this. So you've implemented a salesperson. They have their goals. Are you saying that they need to do 25 estimates a week? That's their goal?
25 a week and to sell half. And then where we found him, he's actually been a painter for us for the past couple of years. And, you know, in the business world, there's a lot of people that are really good at painting, but they lack common sense. And that's kind of how we always look at it. It's like figuring out who are the really good hires compared to the just average painters. And he was like a really good hire. Like he can walk into any job site without a work order and he would know how he would want to paint it. And it's some things like that are just kind of really hard to teach because it's like a common sense factor to it. So he's been working with us for a couple of years as a painter. And then we started doing the epoxy garage floor coatings and he's our stud at that. And, you know, we always just saw something. So, when we decided to make the role kind of like flip over where we needed another salesman, we kind of pitched it to him, gave him some ideas and he goes, whoa, I had no idea that you guys even thought of me as someone that could do that in your company. And it was like a appreciative thing. And so now he stops coming to work in the painting clothes and now he comes to work in a polo and he loves it. And he's driving around doing estimates and it's a constant sit down game with him. So he's always at my desk and we're going over estimates together, how he would word it. So it's definitely a process, but yeah, you know, just teaching him to do it, like how I would do it, making him care about it. Obviously there's questions that we have when we go to create these like leadership roles or when we have these guys that wear these specific hats, you know, just in terms of their pay, how we go about certain things. So, you know, that's what the expo is for. Hopefully we can learn a little more while we're there and keep going and growing.
Awesome. Cool. And then what things did you implement on the production side, Daniel?
Okay, so there's a couple things, and there's a reason why Nate actually ended up getting pulled up. Our sales guy, Nate, ended up getting pulled up into the sales role is because we were trying to eliminate all of the waste that we had out of our hourly guys. There's just a lot of waste in hourly guys. It's nothing against hourly guys. I used to be an hourly guy. There's a reason why we're not hourly guys or gals. We don't enjoy that. We want to get motivated. We want something to entice us. We want that carrot to chase. And I want that same feeling that we wake up in the morning for those guys. And so what we ended up doing is saying, hey, look, we offered it to our hourly guys. Hey, look, we're going to change up how we do things. We're no longer going to have W-2 painters. And we're going to have only subcontractors from this point forward. But you guys could still have your hourly roles. We'll still treat you. If you want to continue to paint hourly, that's just fine. We will not change anything like that. Changing people's pay, like Nick Slavik says, is an emotional thing. So it's like, hey, look, you're at where you're at, and if you're cool with it, that's awesome. But if you want to move up or if you want to move to a subcontractor, we will walk with you. We will walk with you. I'll go through my accountant. I got the sheets over here. We'll walk it through. And that way they're motivated. They're excited to come to work. When they come in here and they finish a job, we're high-fiving. Or if they got a five-star review, now we have incentives for that. So like that is just a big shift in the production side of things. We don't have W-2 painters. We have only subcontractors, which takes the stress level of myself. Instead of having to hover and be like, did they over-order on paint? Because we were allowing our W-2s to order their own paint. Are they clocking in at home? Are they not clocking at home? How long of a lunch break did they take? a lot of that was wearing on the production side of things, on the project manager myself, shoulders for so long that it was like affecting my mental health. I just felt so drained. And since making that shift, we've kind of been a hybrid company the past year. And when we made that shift, I just felt like the weight I was carrying, I call it the production shoulder pads, like it got lighter. And yeah, now that we don't have any W2 painters, oh my goodness, what a relief. It's just amazing. The guys are motivated. They're super excited. They're actually like fist pumping Nate, our new sales guy. And they're like, hey, like keep it up, you know, like get another one, you know, because they want to paint. They're already really good craftsmen. They know how to paint. That's the cool part, especially even our subs. So making that shift was one of the biggest. If anybody's listening or watching, that they're in between and they're having a hard time managing hourly people, it's maybe a lot of that we take as business owners, a lot of that responsibility and say, I hope you do anyways, instead of saying, oh, there's no good help out there. I would argue, look in the mirror a little bit and go, how can I motivate this person to get up and get after it? And that is kind of where Kyle and I are like, hey, look, we already have this awesome business where customers are calling us. The biggest thing we need to fix is how to motivate people. And switching their pay to a flat rate per job has been amazing. It's a win for them. It's a win for us. And it allows us to scale even faster, really. And one of the biggest things too from the group that we ended up changing on the production side of things is now our project manager, I'm like operations manager at this point. We do have a project manager now where he will be ordering paint, and he's more well-trained than any new hourly guy that I could take on. And so we'll be eliminating waste not only there, but also with lunches and things like that, or waste of time. If I hire one of my hourly guys to paint somebody's bedroom, let's say it takes a 4-hour bedroom repaint like Nick Slavik, when they come back to the shop and we don't have another bedroom repaint for them scheduled that day because they kind of exceeded our expectations, well, now there's waste. And now I have to pay them to, you know, clean up the shop, empty out the van, clean out their brush, hang out with us, you know. All of that I start to realize is just waste. And so to immediately, and I don't want that for them. I want them to, in that time frame, instead of kind of milking that, get at the shop and relax a little bit, I want you to go home to your family and spend time with your family. So for me, I'm like, get them there, quick, rinse out your brush, do what you got to do, and then peace out. You know, go home, enjoy yourself versus having to, you know, be clocked in for 40 hours. I didn't want that for them. I want them to be motivated like us.
Interesting. So you had your employees and you changed them all to 1099, so sub. So you have a full sub model now.
Correct. Yep.
Very cool. That's awesome.
We said we were going to do it at the Nick Slavik retreat, and the moment we got here, we're like, it's done.
Man,
it's over.
And it sounds like what you're saying is the guys that you switched over to subs, they are now actually enjoying it better. It sounds like a little more in tune. They're high-fiving Nate when he sells a job. So in some capacity, you've helped the morale of your company by switching the way that this is operating.
Right. Yeah. And you know, it's like a mindset thing also. It's like teaching them to care, getting them to buy into what we're doing. So it's like they're their own, you know, contractor now, but they still care about what 605 painting is doing. Cause I mean, we're the light at the end of the tunnel that, you know, that keeps them afloat. So yeah, no, definitely a mindset of getting everyone to care, getting everyone to buy into what we're doing and what we're trying to sell. And, you know, kind of what we're passionate about, you know, we don't have our company like morals or anything like that yet, but I know
core values.
Yeah. So we don't have any of our core values yet, but once we get those going, I know everyone's just going to buy into it. And it's like, I bet we can get everyone to recite word for word what each one of our core values is. So yeah, we're excited to get there. And yeah, it's a morale thing for sure. Yeah, everyone's more excited to come in. The guys that were once painting that are now doing production and sales, they're happier that they don't have to paint. They found the role that they kind of want to do and be in. And then all the guys that wanted to keep painting, like everyone's here for, you know, their paycheck. So it's like they got a pay increase. We got a pay increase with it as well too.
Our accountant's awesome.
And they're just going and they care. So that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on not only a boost of morale for the team, but also a better end product for the homeowner. Because for the homeowner, you're not getting an hourly guy that we attempted to train at the shop. We did what we could, a little hands-on. But you actually have somebody who loves painting and who has been painting for many years. So for us, that was kind of a big sell too, is like, I, as a want-to-be educator, right? I think, were you as well? Somebody at the Next Level Retreat was a teacher by chance, or was going
Maggie.
To be a teacher.
Maggie was in the education world.
Yeah. Okay. So like, we want to teach. I really want to invest in these hourly guys, but they didn't want to learn. And it's so hard when the eyeballs, and when you're trying to teach them, and the eyeballs are just, they're looking right through you. And for a subcontractor who loves painting, they're like invested. They're asking those questions that, as a teacher, now you're getting excited. And that's the awesome part of changing from hourly to subcontractor only has been a blessing, really.
Very good. Well, I love it. You guys are killing it. So our time is almost up. I've got one question I ask everybody. Kyle, I'm going to shoot this your way first. What do you do for yourself, for Kyle, to take care of yourself, to make sure that you can show up every day and run this amazing company that you guys are building? What do you do to take care of yourself so that you can keep growing as a person and just kill it in this business?
Yeah, so obviously just super motivated to be here each and every day, especially after the Slavic retreat. Holy moly. We were driving home and we're talking, we're high-fiving, but just in the workplace, I love being here. I love looking at the flaws and fixing the flaws. And then outside of work, you know, I'm a big gym goer, so I like to get up and get after it. Always trying to learn as well too. So I'm actually reading Traction at home right now, EOS Traction. So trying to pick and choose some things from there that can kind of apply to our business. And then, you know, separating personal from business a little bit here and there. But I mean, when you're an entrepreneur, you're never too far away. So yeah, no, it's definitely a balance. But at the end of the day, I was at a event a premier center in town, and I was at an event last night, and the guy that was speaking, he talked about business a little bit, and I zoomed in a lot harder than I already was, and I was just like, talk to me, and I was like I'm all business, I'm all ears. And the people that are with, they're like-minded individuals, you know, they're kind of in the business market for themselves as well too. So it's surrounding yourself with the kind of people that share the same mindset, and it's people that you can kind of lean on for, you know, advice in certain situations and things like that. So as an entrepreneur, you're never too far out of it, but I mean, there's family time and stuff like that as well that you need to step away. But I mean, at the end of the day, this is what I care about. This is what I do. Yeah. So I'm always going to be a business minded guru.
That's right.
And all right, I joke with the guys. Junior. I keep my mental.
Sorry, we keep cutting each other off, but I had to throw in there Daniel Jr. because Daniel let me know that he was a junior. I asked him if he'd like me to just call him Junior. He said, no, stick with Daniel. But Daniel, so what do you do to take care of yourself? I know you're married, you've got plans. I know your wife likes to take vacations, but what do you do to take care of yourself so you can show up for this business and keep killing it?
Excellent, great question. That's a big part. Taking care of yourself is kind of a big part that Kyle started doing a little bit before I did personally. Like there'd be times where he wouldn't answer some people's phone calls after hours if he knew it wasn't that serious. And I was like, at first there was kind of a headbutting thing. I was like, Kyle, you need to do a little bit more, right? And then my personal side started getting more and more busy, and I started to value more and more of that time. That's where I started to look at that and like envy that. I'm like, how can he just put the phone down? That is awesome. So now that we've kind of both set those standards, like, and then just telling the team, like, hey, look, if it's not that serious, you know, I do value your time so much, but let's try to keep it at work if we can. 100%, we're there if you need us after hours. Setting that boundary was huge for me. Walking to the mailbox is one of my favorite, like, mental breaks in a day where I go outside, whether it's freezing cold out, whether it's blizzarding, whether it's raining, I don't care. If there's a part of my day that I'm like, I need that mental reset button, that refresher, I'll walk outside and I'll go check the mail. And hopefully there's a check in there, right? So it's kind of a win-win. I get like a mental refresher. And I even told our project manager, hey, if you're ever overwhelmed, just go walk to the mailbox. Just go check it.
I like that.
We were supposed to have a fancy mic for this podcast that I ordered on Amazon, and it didn't come. So walking to the mailbox was a little depressing the last 2 days waiting for this microphone. But it sounds so simple, but yeah, the mailbox walk is one of my favorite refreshers. And then just staying really active outside of work. Like, you know, Kyle likes to go to the gym. I'm very competitive. The gym is a competitive area, but I like to like 1v1 versus you in something, whether it's kicking his butt in Madden,
you wish,
one time out of a million, playing video games or playing the tackle football league or flag football league or co-ed volleyball, some kind of sport where like I could also be very competitive. That is kind of me in nature. And I know that's why Kyle and I are successful, if you would call it, in the painting world, because we're competitive and we want to be the best. And that's and that's why we do a lot for our homeowners. You know, yeah, if we don't get a 5-star review, we feel like we failed. That's kind of what he phrased it one time. And I'm like, I relate to that. If I don't see a ding or a notification on my phone that we got a 5-star review after a week of them passing, I'm like, sad face.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we only have so much time here, but I will have you guys back, especially after you get that microphone, because you guys have so much more, information that you can share. Like, you guys kill it with your reviews. You know, I think even just your relationship, there's a lot for folks to learn there, where you guys have been friends for years. And Daniel always gives Kyle a hard time, and Kyle handles it like a champ. There's so much more we could talk about. Before we end, though, we did get a question from Facebook. And I just want to give this to you guys. The question was, are you paying them per job instead of hour? So this was your employees. Maybe just explain that a little bit more in depth. So you had employees, you were paying hourly, you transitioned them to subcontractors. Are you paying them per job or hourly?
Per job, great question. So yeah, how we had our sub kind of module beforehand is we would pay them a percentage. They would pay for paint, their sundries, everything like that. And then, yeah, when the job was completed, we would give them pay. Well, we kind of switched things up a little bit. We are now solely in charge of providing paint. They still get a percentage per job. And then, yeah, once the job is complete, they will get their final payment as long as the customer's happy. We have a whole list of like guidelines and expectations that they need to meet before they get paid. And, you know, making sure the customer loves the final end product and they're super happy. At the end of the day, that's all we can really ask for.
And to follow up with that, I wanted to make sure in that Facebook question, if they were if they were asking about our hourly guys that we changed the subs in the sales role and the project manager role, because those two roles are currently hourly for the moment.
Okay.
But we're changing that. We are tweaking the sheet that you ended up sending us for the moment. And we're going to create another sheet to where those guys have salary plus commission. So they're going to be getting a sliver off of the total gross profit that we would be getting. As long as we're profiting above, I think it's the 40 mark. We're still working on a lot of that internally, but the guys that we have in those seats, they love it. They're working on it with us. They're super excited for it. And they can't wait to become salary and then get a commission off of that. So, just answer both ways.
Yeah, very good. Listen, guys, our time is up, unfortunately, because there's a million more things I could ask you. But thank you for joining me. I will see you at the PCA Expo here. Gosh, it's like next week, right?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for joining me. And I will see you guys next time.
Excellent. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
PayNet podcasts are produced by the Painting Contractors Association and are made possible by members and industry partners. To find out more about upcoming education opportunities or for more information about joining PCA, visit pcapainted.org.